From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, the prophecies of John Hogue. I'm looking forward to that. It's been a while since I had John on, and he's got a bundle of things to talk about. Hey, I got to tell you about my trip to Austin, Texas for the KLBJ Talk Fest. By the way, the people in Austin, Texas, if you've never been there, what an incredible city and what wonderful people. But a couple things happened to me on the way. By the way, I am sporting about 102-degree fever right now, and I am going to do this program and push it as long as I can. But if you hear my voice pop a little bit, you will know why. Thanks to a new client, which I'll tell you about a little bit later on tonight, he has saved me right now. But we went to KLBJ, Tommy and I. We set up, did the show Friday, and then we had the Talk Fest, of course, on Saturday morning. But after the program ended on Friday night into Saturday morning, we went outside and we were going to get into the car and off to the hotel room we were going. And there was a puddle of water there, which I thought might have been about an inch deep. That's the way it looked. And I got to tell you, when I go between Los Angeles and St. Louis, I don't bring a lot of clothes because I've got it in both cities. So I brought just enough for the Talk Fest, and I wore the outfit I was wearing that night, and I was just going to polish up the next day. So I step into this little puddle, which turned out to be not so little. It might have been 8 feet deep, I kid you not. Down I went, tumbled over. I mean, not just my leg went into this puddle. I tumbled over and fell, and I looked like Swamp Man. My leather jacket was full of grass clippings and mud. My slacks were muddy. My shoes were soaked. I mean, absolutely soaked. So I told Tom, I said, Tom, I'm in trouble. I can't go to the Talk Fest like this. He said, don't worry about it. I'll get up early. And another member, Tom, another Tom at KLBJ, drove him, and he went to pick up an outfit for me. Now, that's what a producer's for, a great producer. And so we went and did the Talk Fest. However, while I was in the hotel room, waiting for Tom to knock on the door and leave the package by the end of the door so I could reach my hand in and grab it and pull it in, I'm in the room stark naked. And my window's open, but it's daytime, right? People really can't. And I'm overlooking the city of Austin, Texas. And what happens? But two window washers hoist themselves down right in front of my window. I couldn't believe it. But we had the Talk Fest, and then after that, we jumped in a plane. Tom went back to Los Angeles. I went to St. Louis, and that's where I think I may have gotten my first bug in a long time. You know, Art used to say on long trips, he would always come down with some kind of cold or fever, and he blamed the circulating air in an airplane. And it never happened to me, so I never had a chance to experience that. And I got to tell you, it started off raspy, and then bang, it hit me. Well, here are some of the stories of the day. First of all, if you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the hot story. The first blurry pictures of the near-miss asteroid just been released. Astronomers have obtained the first images of an asteroid on course to make its closest approach to Earth on Tuesday, showing the space rock is lopsided. The new images taken with the Goldstone Solar System Radar Telescope in California's Mojave Desert refine estimates of the asteroid's size. They've got it now down to about 800 feet in diameter, not 2,000 feet. Scientists say that it will miss the planet. Of course, there are a few others out there that say no, but scientists say it will miss. In Vermont, there's an area there called Brattleboro. Residents there will vote on a town meeting whether President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney should be indicted and arrested for war crimes, perjury, or obstruction of justice if they ever step foot in Vermont. The Brattleboro Select Board voted 3-2 on Friday to put the controversial item on a town meeting vote. They will do that sometime in March. Severe winter weather is causing travel chaos in China as tens of millions of people try to return home for the country's main holiday, the Lunar New Year. At least 170 people are stuck at a railway station. They can't get out. The trains have been canceled. And then many thousands are stranded because of blocked roads, with some areas running out of salt to spread on very icy surfaces. More than 20 people have already been killed there in China. in Weymouth, Massachusetts. A 27-year-old man fell through the ice while walking home in the dark. He survived the plunge thanks to a neighbor who skidded across the pond in a canoe. The fellow who fell in said, "It was disturbing. I'm going down. Don't let me die. This is scary." But his neighbor saved him. New home sales plunged in 2007 by the largest amount on record, while home prices tumbled sharply in December. Analysts forecast more trouble in 2008 as housing tries to emerge from its worst slump in more than two decades. Also, the feature story at coasttocoastam.com. Somewhere near the Empire State Building in New York, cars get zapped, and they're beginning to think it might have something to do with the building. Several cars a day bizarrely get stranded on a five-block Bermuda Triangle near the Empire State Building. In the shadow of the Empire State Building lies what they call the Automotive Bermuda Triangle, a five-block radius where vehicles mysteriously simply die. No one is sure what's causing it, but all roads appear to lead to the looming giant, the Empire State Building. It's a great story up there at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, one of the world's renowned experts in afterlife and death experiences, Raymond Moody. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. This individual is a friend of ours, and he's one of the best there is when it has to do with life after life and near-death experiences. Raymond Moody is the foremost expert on the phenomenon of near-death experience, as well as compelling lecturer on the subjects of evocation of the deceased, cult activities, out-of-body experiences. He is our very special guest right now on Coast to Coast. Raymond, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, George, and I am so happy to be talking with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. We're going to be at the Conscious Life Expo. I'll be there on Saturday the 9th. You'll be there over the weekend. I am looking forward to meeting you. We got to sit down and chat with each other, Raymond.
Yes, indeed. I'm really looking forward to it.
So here I am doing the show with a nearly 102-degree fever. I may be the closest to a near-death experience I've ever had. What do I do?
Well, what are your other symptoms?
Well, you know what? I've never had the flu, Raymond. A little achy. I've been gargling, of course. And, you know, I feel okay. I hate fevers.
Anywhere?
No, not really.
What about,
really,
like, your neck? Is it moving freely?
Yeah, I'm okay there.
Yeah, well, okay. But 102, that's not too bad.
But, you know, it's the body's way of fighting off whatever's in there.
You might be, you could possibly get delirious.
If I start asking you weird and bizarre questions.
Great. That would be interesting.
Yeah, and speak up as loudly as you can, Raymond. Okay.
Hey,
tell me, what are you going to be doing in the Conscious Life Expo?
Well, I'm talking about my favorite subject overall, which is my professionally anyway, which is the whole question of life after death, with specific reference to near-death experiences. These experiences now that have been studied all over the world, really, by physicians who of patients who come close to death, get many of them actually pronounced dead or believed dead, and then get resuscitated following an apparent cardiac arrest, and come back to tell us of really amazing life-changing experiences of getting out of their bodies and watching their body from a point of view up above, telling us that they go through some sort of passageway and come out in an entirely different realm of being, what they describe as a beautiful light of complete joy and love, which fills up everything. And in that context, tell us that they become aware of relatives or friends of theirs who have passed away, who seem to be there almost as a greeting committee.
They are. They're there to help, aren't they?
Yeah. And people tell us in many cases they go through this experience, they see their whole life pass in review. At some point they have to come back, and they tell us they come back to their body and return to life, and this from then on out in their lives is a very powerful influence on them and changes them very dramatically.
What happened in your life, Raymond, to get you interested in this phenomenon?
Well, Georgia, you and I have another interest in common, which is the heavens. And
yes.
I became an avid amateur astronomer at the age of 7. And and I'm 63 years old now. And I remember reading the first book I checked out of the library in grammar school was a little textbook on astronomy. And this is really laughable, Georgia, in 2008. But I remember very well that in talking about the galaxy, for example, they talked about, well, you know, it could be that there are planets orbiting other stars in our galaxy or other galaxies. But even if there are, we never really will know. And I laugh about that every time I hear the latest tally of extra solar planets that have been discovered. Now it's up to what? Well over 200.
Oh, and counting.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, to me, as it must have been to you, the first time I ever heard that, I said, well, of course. I mean, there have to be other civilizations out there. It seems to me, I know that ultimately there's no firm rational basis for that, except just the sense that sort of always worked out in history is that what happens here could happen somewhere else. And I have been really, since about the age of 7, George, waiting for that that discovery. I personally, I hope to goodness that I'm wrong on this, but I just don't see anything in the UFO thing that really cinches it for me that we've been visited by extraterrestrials. I sure do hope I'm wrong, but. But even if I'm not wrong, it wouldn't surprise me to wake up tomorrow,
right,
and find out that definitive signals of extraterrestrial intelligence have been uncovered or whatever. And whoa, what a day. I mean, that will be the year zero. And I think it's really so interesting that here in 2008 we separate the question of whether there is life after death from the question of whether there is intelligent life in outer space. But the really wacky thing is that if you trace this question back just a few hundred years, it merges. It merges into one question. And back in, for example, the early part of the 19th century, there was a man who I believe was both an astronomer and a theologian or something. I think his name was Chalmers, who published these books stating that, you know, that the problem for them was that when it became obvious with discoveries by Kant and people like that, that it really began to seem that these other splotches, they couldn't tell what they were, that were at the limit of the resolution of the telescope, must be other galaxies, like the Milky Way galaxy that Kant had sort of described.
And they found out, Raymond, they're all over the place.
That's right. And that they go on and on and on. And, that immediately created the problem. Well, what are all these other planets doing out there in light of the Bible account, for example? So they had to have some sort of purpose that God would have had in creating all these other planets. And you would really be surprised to hear what Chalmers decided was that God had made these other planets out there our ancestors who had passed on over and were gone, and that's the habitation they would be on, which really makes it a funny thought. I mean, it would still be a very thinly populated universe,
yeah,
given all the. But nonetheless, my serious point being that The whole notion of other worlds, I mean, it's not always been as clearly distinguished that we do today between, say, the phenomena related to life after death and the phenomena related to the possible existence of life in outer space.
Well, are you saying, though, that life that could be out in outer space could also be interpreted as where the soul goes after it leaves the body?
Well, yes. That's one thing I am getting at, that view has been put out there in the future. If you think about it, there's two different possibilities for a life after death, at least. One of them would be an intracosmic life after death. In other words, the kind of life after death where... As in this Chalmers idea, which was the standard, many educated people believed that back then, that's what these other planets in outer space were for, was to be habitations for our ancestors when they die, and that's where we'll go to meet them. But,
you know, the work, though, Raymond, with near-death experiences, and in your work specifically,
yep,
gives people hope, gives people solace.
And they have every right to have hope. And that's why I'm so adamant, George, is to say it's really too premature to look at this like, oh, this is scientific evidence of an afterlife. Number one, that's just not true. And number two, it undermines the real message, which is what you're getting at, is that since there's no such thing as an expert on this who can tell us either way, then people have the perfect right to make up their own minds about this. And really, I mean, holy mackerel, this has been debated. Plato wrote about near-death experiences. And Democritus, who was the ancient Greek philosopher who lived about the same time as Plato, who came up with the notion of the atomic theory of matter, wrote about these near-death experiences even back then. And they sort of debated about it, just as the medical materialists today debate against the people with a more who leave open the possibility of a spiritual interpretation. So this is a very important thing that goes way back in history, and the fact that it's not resolvable yet by scientific means is that really opens up the possibility, like you're talking about, of hope. Because it is a really, really hopeful message.
It is. And, you know, we're going to open up the phone lines shortly, Raymond. You're going to find people who have this hope because of these experiences.
Yep. Oh, yes. I hear about this all the time. And I think that's really the most important thing there, that you exactly put your finger on.
Is there anything about it that concerns you? Is there anything about it that bothers you, that maybe we shouldn't be dabbling with this?
Oh, no, I am an explorer. Absolutely not. And to me, when we investigate this phenomenon, that's the best that human nature has to offer in a way. I mean, it seems to me that this question of life after death is almost part of our human nature. I mean, isn't one of the big distinguishing points between these pre-human or pre-Homo sapien species like Homo erectus? And so I believe that a big shift came with Homo sapiens, and that one of the distinguishing features seemed to be the burial of the dead in such a way that suggests that they anticipated there was an afterlife.
Stay with us. Raymond Moody, our special guest. We're going to take your phone calls next. Raymond will be at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles on February 8th and 9th. And you can get more information on that when we start posting it very soon on the coasttocoastam.com website. Hey, Raymond Moody's website is lifeafterlife.com. And we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Raymond Moody, our special guest, and your phone calls as well. What's new with the work in the books Rimmon?
Well, George, I'm going to send to you pretty soon my new book. And basically what it's about is that I have worked out an entirely new system for rational thinking about this, not just the question of life after death, but other important questions too. And this is a wholly new kind of approach that will, as a sort of side reaction, be the vehicle of a whole new kind of study of near-death experiences that I'm doing. I am taking people through a process which will have the effect of reformatting their mind. That much is a certainty, and here is where I go into plausible conjecture. And that is that I believe that after they go through this process, when in the future they just by chance they have their near-death experiences, they are going to be talking about it in a whole different way from what we see now. And I know this sounds so abstruse and wild and kind of improbable, but I bet you that if you read through this, that you will agree with me. So I'll send it to you pretty soon.
All right, great. All right, let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Raymond Moody on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this is Art in Washington.
Okay, sir.
I was just wondering, does one actually have to be dead to come back and claim a death experience?
Well, these near-death experiences people have when they come close to death, can also, some parts of it at least, occur in other circumstances. For example, consider like the out-of-body part of it, that people say they get out of their bodies and they drift up and they look and see their own physical bodies down below. Well, that happens not just when people nearly die, but sometimes just from being out in nature. A paper I read some years ago talked about it had been found that it was fairly common for astronomers standing at their telescopes looking at the vast interstellar reaches would sometimes have this experience of seeming to move up and watch their body from above. So all kinds of things other than a close call with death can bring on profound spiritual experiences that are somewhat like life or these near-death experiences. Yes, sir, absolutely.
Raymond, are you happy with the research in this field, or is there any, besides what you and some other people are doing?
Well, you know something, I am to this extent, George, and that is that I'm not one of these people who believes that by spending $1 billion on some sort of big study of this, you could do something sensational
or get the answers. You won't get the answers.
That's right. That's right. I think it's going to be more likely to come from a sort of accumulation of little steps rather than one big step. But I just can't see at all that there's some sort of lack of research on this. I mean, it's a fascinating phenomenon, and it really inspires hope, and we need to go to know more about it. But whether we're going to solve it anytime soon, I just don't know. But I do feel completely sure that we will get a little closer to understanding in a rational way this whole question of life after death in the next few years. I really do think so, yeah.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Good morning, you're on Coast to Coast.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Dr. Moody.
Hello,
hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bill.
Yes, Dr. Moody, hi. I am an amateur astronomer at age 58 right now, just like you were as a kid. And I look at this from a scientific point of view. I'm not a religious person. I'm an atheist and a skeptic. Mm-hmm. And so I would not call the thing, a soul, if we exist after we die. We don't want to use the word soul because that's a loaded word, S-O-U-L, and implies heaven and hell and the Old Testament, New Testament, the God, the Quran, etc. Let's just say I'll use the word mind or consciousness. My question to you specifically, taking what you said earlier, was using 1950s or very early 1960s science that's not and updated now to 2008 to a term that is on the cutting edge of astronomy, the multiverse, the infinite universes theory, as well as quantum mechanics, that version of the multiverse. What I'm trying to say, and I'll form a question right now, is do you think possibly the mind, once the person dies, putting this in a non-religious setting, but more like in a scientific setting instead, that the mind could exist in another universe or another dimension like the multiverse?
Well, I think that's one of the possibilities. And you know what I think the real underlying problem is? And I should, to put context around this, I should explain that before I went to medical school, I went to medical school and got an MD and then became a psychiatrist. But before that, I had gotten a PhD in philosophy and have a special interest in ancient Greek philosophy and in epistemology and logic. And from that perspective, the real question surrounding life after death, it really devolves onto what we call the mind-body problem. Now, each generation comes along and they say, oh, yeah, you know, we got the answer. We know what the relationship between the mind and the body is. And I just don't buy it. I mean, that is a problem that goes at least back to Pythagoras. And the idea that we are going to, that we have, in my opinion, that we are close to solving this really big mystery of what consciousness is, of what the relationship between, say, the brain and the conscious awareness and so on, that is a really big one. And some people even sort of suspect that that question is not solvable because we are grounded in it, if you see what I mean. I mean, we can't kind of get outside of it to determine an answer. But, and I'm not trying to be obscure here, but just to say that that is my honest response to your question. I think that the real question here is, what in the name of God is consciousness? I mean, what are we talking about here? And so, yes, there are really big problems here. Now, as to whether this might eventually be solved, who knows? You know, I mean, it's, as I'm sure you remember, there was a time where many astronomers thought, no, there's no way that we can detect planets around other stars. And now it's a whole different story. So I just, you know, there's no way I can close off the possibility in my mind that the future will bring some, you know, actual resolution to this. But I do think that if in the future, say, that science changes into something that can give a definitive proof of this, then that very process would probably have to expand the human mind itself and extend the reach of reason. Because, for the reason that, for example, a great thinker, David Hume, as put it best when he pointed out that really the problem with the question of life after death is that the logic that we use, which is based on the classical logic of Aristotle, essentially, just can't wrap itself around this question of life after death. As Hume put it, some new species of logic is required for that purpose. And then Hume went on to point out that incorporating a new kind of logic like that inside of us would, at the same time, expand our mind. We'd be a different kind of mind we would have. But that kind of thing has happened in the future. I mean, I'm sorry, has happened in the past, where really big developments in logic or thought have had profound expanding effects on the way of the human mind.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Raymond, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Yeah, hi. My name's Dennis. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Thank you, Dennis.
Say, this show is always, I have to say, George, it's always an education.
I appreciate
that. Raymond. I'm glad to have the chance to talk to you.
Well, likewise. Thank you.
I have for the past, most of my life, I've been looking for answers to the mystical experiences in my life as well as, and I've never had a near-death experience. I have to preface that. I'm going to try to keep this narrowed down to my question, but I do would like to preface this a little bit in saying that early on I noticed just that there seemed to be some original religion in this world before things started getting split off and going sectarian and so on. And so I got into comparative mythology and comparative religion. And what kind of brought it together was your help with Danion Brinkley and his story. I started making some major connections with what the ancients understood about heaven and the gods and so on, and near-death experiences. And my question specifically is, George had a guest on here, a woman who has had more than one near-death experience. I can't remember her name, but she had it at least one of them in childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
And she was describing the other side. She was describing the City of Light or whatever, and the radiant bright flowers, the gardens, the groves.
Yep.
And one of the things she mentioned was that there was an inordinate amount of willow trees.
Huh.
So, well, my understanding of the ancient Greeks, there was a goddess of death and resurrection named Persephone.
Persephone, yeah.
And Proserpine is another name for her.
Uh-huh.
And willow groves were sacred to her.
Well, as a matter of fact, as you may know, that story also is partly anchored in a place called the Oracle of the Dead up in this area of Greece called Thesprotia in the far northwest corner. And in ancient times, they had an oracle of the dead there, which is the one that's sort of alluded to in Homer's story in the Odyssey, where Odysseus goes up to this place. But it has been sort of excavated now, and you can go up there. And that was supposedly the seat of Persephone. And yes, sir, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, thank you. That validates a lot of my work. I could go into other things. I'm not going to because it's too involved, but really glad to for that answer. That really helps in my studies and my understanding. I'm a believer. I'm not one for blind faith. I want to know what, who, why, and all of that. And I think, you know, I believe actually if you search for something long enough, it will find you. And I think that's what has happened in my case.
Okay.
So thank you very much, and you all have a good evening.
Thank you. How important is having faith in this subject, Raymond?
Well, you know, George, I think it's the really important thing here is to make sure that the faith and the reason don't get mixed up. For this reason, I think that really isn't sort of being honest with yourself is the happiest state of being, the happiest way to be, in my opinion. Well, if we start out with applying reason to this question of life after death, I think what we really need to acknowledge to ourselves is that the reason why we appeal to reason is that we are looking for the unique legitimacy that it provides. In other words, if you work through your bank statement and you get your balance by arithmetic and you follow the rules correctly, you come up with the same answer as anybody else or the computer or the bank or whatever.
Well, you don't know my bank statement, Raymond.
That's right. There you go. But you know what I mean. This is the theory. If you didn't get the same answer, then something's wrong. But when we make that commitment to go by reason, then we've got to follow it all the way. See what I'm getting at?
Yep.
You really got to bear down on it. Because to me, I think that we owe the question that respect. This is the most important question there is. So therefore, we ought to be respectful in investigating it. And see, the really happy thing to me is that if you apply the, I think, the strongest reason that you can apply to it, that still you come out in a pretty good shape with this question. It's the most important question. And I am really, the reason I'm so passionate about it and keep working on it and keep being fascinated by it with it is, number one, was that it was one of the foundational questions of Western philosophy. Plato was my hero, and he thought it was the biggest question. And secondly, because the question is important to all of us, it's important when we're grieving, we lose a loved one to death, or when we begin to age ourselves or have a terminal diagnosis. And so I believe that there's some people who are satisfied with their faith, and I say, that's great. In other words, if somebody tells me that I accept on because of my religious faith that there's a life after death, I say, that's terrific. If somebody says to me that they accept that there's a life after death because they have a personal experience, like a near-death experience, I say, that's terrific, too.
Sure.
And then the trouble is that there's also a big group of us who are kind of left outside of that, that we, you know, we can't say it on faith. We haven't had an experience. And the big question is, can we reason through it and come up with some sort of, you know, answer or getting closer to the truth on it? And I think we can, absolutely.
Okay, let's see if we can squeeze in one more call, Raymond. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Eddie in Dallas.
Hello, Eddie. Go ahead.
First of all, are you in L.A.?
No, I'm in St. Louis right now, Eddie.
Okay. Coast to coast family, everybody point toward St. Louis and send some great thoughts to George to get him well.
Break this fever. Thanks, Eddie.
And I think that the reason that people want to believe and do believe in life after death, these near-death experiences, is that what is the greatest fear of humans is the fear of death. And whenever we hear these stories of life after, you know, our near-death experiences and how beautiful they are, it gives us comfort.
Yep. There you go. That too, goes right back to the ancient philosophers. Plato said that in giving these rational arguments to the for an afterlife, he plainly alludes them to his reach, those arguments. He characterizes them as an attempt at consoling myself and others. In other words, that even in the very beginning of rational speculation about life after death, the purpose of it ultimately was to console people and comfort them.
Indeed it was. Let's take one more quick one. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hey, George, Blair in Sedona.
Hey, Blair, just a minute to go. Go ahead.
Great, great. Elizabeth Clare Prophet, Art, had interviewed on this Somewhere in Time last week, and she mentioned Malachi and Matthew about Elijah. And so that sort of combined, according to many people's minds, that Jesus believes not only in life after death, but reincarnation, because he said you rejected Elijah when he came the second time.
Well, he did. Indeed, he did. Raymond Moody, we shall see you at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo, my friend.
Looking forward to seeing you, George.
Take care. Just up next, John Hoag and his prophecies on Coast to Coast AM.